folks, it's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here, and sitting across from me
is Mike Cosentino. And, we've been doing these nonpartisan shows are kind of getting to be a habit. They're going to take our card away. They're going to take our liberal card away if we keep on. But we have another sort of nonpartisan show. I'm not going to give Supervisor Randy Garrison from District 3, Yavapai County, is with us this morning, and we're not going to give him too hard a time for being a Republican.
Oh, he's a Republican. He's on our show.
But
oh, my God.
I was talking about it before the show. He's a community-minded guy. He did it the opposite I did it. He finally found the public service position that pays something. But he started on the Mingus board. He went to the Cottonwood Oak Creek School Board. He did the Cottonwood City Council. And now he's on the Yavapai Board of Supervisors for our district, for most of Sedona and Cottonwood. So we got a lot to talk about. I want to talk about development. He's got things he wants to talk about. So we'll see who wins here.
I want to ask you first, Randy, because the fire board elections are nonpartisan. School board elections are nonpartisan. The city councilors, mayor's offices are all nonpartisan. But when we get to your level, to the board of supervisors, it's a partisan election. Should it be one?
When I came into this position, ran for this position, that was one of the questions that was asked a lot. Are we getting this loud enough?
Yeah.
That was one of the questions that was asked a lot. Why is it partisan? Because should it be partisan? And I really had a hard time answering that at that point in time. Now that I've had the job for almost 4 years, I've come to understand just how important it is to be partisan, actually. As Mike pointed out, when you're on a high school board, you make rules and regulations and you oversee budget. When you're on school boards, that's what you do. You make policies that affect the students and put in programs in place, and you go out to the citizens and make sure that's what they want for their children. When you get on city councils, you put ordinances in place, you put rules in place, you do zoning, you do all these things that affect the people that live within the city limits. And in Cottonwood's case, unfortunately, you affect things that happen, that you put rules in place that affect people that don't live in your town. So that was one of the difficult parts about being on Cottonwood, is you're speaking directly for 10,000 people who voted you in, but you're affecting 20,000 people, because that's how many people come into that community and either work or spend their money or use the services. And so you directly impact more people because of the ability to make rules and regulations directly. When you get to the county level, you don't anymore. The state makes the rules. So when we go out into a community and they have a problem, as in the Airbnb issue that we've got going right now, we can't put rules and regulations in place. The state makes those rules. So we have to then go out to the state, find out how to fix it, put legislation forward that fixes that problem, or hopefully put some limits in place, or something in place that helps create an impact that's a positive impact on your community that's having that problem, and then bring it back to the community and we implement and enforce that. So when you get to the legislature and you get to the federal government, it absolutely is partisan. And so in order to get support for your bills, in order to get support for the things that you need to do to create the benefits for your community that they're asking for, being a partisan position really matters, because that's where you're going to line
your
up your
people
support. If your people are in power. But even if your people aren't in power, it creates a starting point for a conversation. So I think it is important that people understand the difference between nonpartisan and partisan, why we're partisan. And this year it matters all the more. We are the legislative liaison for the county this year. So we've been on the County Supervisor Association for all 4 years that we've been elected, and so we go down and meet with the legislators, and we meet as a group of whole. There's 61 of us. We get together, decide what legislation we want to push. We argue about whether that's in our benefit or not, and it's a very mixed crowd there. It's not all Republicans. It's not all Democrats. Very mixed. So we have fairly thorough discussions and debates on what we want to pursue, and then we come together with pushing those out, and then we meet through the legislative session, which we're in right now, as a smaller group, and that's the legislative liaison. So every county puts forward one person who goes down and deals with the legislature, and that's us this year.
And you're talking about Arizona supervisors, supervisors from all over Arizona.
So this is the County Supervisor Association.
Are there positions?
Before I do anything else, Brandy Christine Bateman is sitting here. Randy Garrison, supervisor of Yavapai County District 3, and his able assistant, Brandy, is right here, who I didn't, I'm sort of blocking her, but there she is, right here, folks. I'm sorry, Brandy's right here as Randy's assistant, and
she's got more hair than you do, Mike.
And well, that's one. So that's, we want to make sure that we got Brandy in here. Because she's gonna, you couldn't keep her quiet if you tried. So we are, but I do want to talk about the race, the supervisor's mm-hmm. race, since we want to talk about development. We want to talk about workforce housing as a mm-hmm. big deal people want to hear about. But we also want to get the political stuff in here.
Because this year you have a Democratic opponent, at least
that's
a potential
fairly,
Democratic
that's pretty
opponent.
Rare. Yeah. She's been on the show once or twice, Donna Michaels.
Yeah. And you've been on the show several times, mm-hmm. and before you've never had I don't think you've had a Democratic opponent in the general election, have you?
I haven't. That last time it was my election was over in the primary race. I ran against Republicans. So we were over early. This year it'll be a completely different battle. The primaries won't really matter too much. It's going to come down to the general.
You don't think you'll have a Republican opponent?
So far, nobody's jumped in the race, and it's getting pretty late.
So it's getting to be a general election rather than a Republican primary.
That's what
election.
It's looking like, yeah.
Yeah, Mike and I didn't vote for you in the Republican primary.
I kind of expected that, yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't want to shock you, but, neither one of us voted for you in the Republican primary.
Not in the primary, no. The we do want to talk about, I wanted to, do you see this as a tough race? Is the county changing? A lot of Arizona is changing, a little less conservative. But there are moderate Republicans, but certainly nationwide, moderate Republicans are afraid of not getting reelected. Their voter base is some of us consider extremely conservative, beyond the pale. So would you characterize this as a tough race?
Yes and no. So, yes, from the standpoint of my district, of all five districts in this county, is probably the most closely aligned when you look at total Republicans versus total Democrats. And then you throw in independents. Independents is a very large portion of this district.
It really
you get
is.
Into District 1, and it's like 80%. So, there's not much chance for a Democrat in District 1, even though you've got one running that looks like he might actually create a wave over there. So we'll see. So from that standpoint, I think it's going to be a more difficult race than I would like. I was hoping not to have an opponent, right. But obviously that didn't happen. So we're moving forward. But I think when it comes down to standing up in front of a group of people and explaining what we've done, what we're doing, and the job that we've done, it's going to be very difficult to beat us if people are being honest and respective of the work that we've accomplished in the time we have. Because while we may be partisan, and I am a Republican, I would think that the communities overall would have to feel very well supported by the work that we've done for the last 4 years. And one of the things that's really important to keep in mind as well is I'm one of five.
Right.
So you have to get along with four other people, three of which are on the other side of the mountain completely. And when one third of your county is on this side of the hill and we have basically 1.5 voices out of 5 that are standing up and representing what's done. And the money and the resources that are brought back into our communities, I think we've done an amazing job of not only standing up and supporting our communities, bringing money into our communities, but having a very good relationship with the people on the other side of the hill that is respectable and they understand and they provide that support for us, even though they know they can take it away from us, just exactly what happened with Yavapai College. We don't have that relationship with the county. We have a great relationship to the point of my second year being on this council, this board. I was vice chair. Last year I served as chair. This year I'm vice chair once again, and next year I'll be chair again. So, you know, we came in at the bottom end of the scale of 5 people, and we've assumed really strong leadership, and the group on the other side of the mountain have been
I think most folks arriving in the Verde Valley fairly recently or who don't follow politics, the big issue in the past has been the representation of the Verde Valley versus the representation of the on the other side of the mountain. And it's proper in terms of a population, but Verde Valley has long felt kind of discriminated against or overlooked in the representation in the Yavapai Board of Supervisors and other ways too.
I think you're absolutely right. And you know, Chip Davis, when he came into this role, it was very much no voice for this side of the hill, or very weak voice for this side of the hill, and there was only 3 of them at that standpoint. But he brought every service that we have over on this side of the mountain. He got us back our funding. He really made the eastern portion of Yavapai County and the Verde Valley very much of a voice for everything that was done in that county, and they basically became very respectful of that that division of not only power but of resources. And that's one thing I think that we're going to be pointing out when we start having our public forums and our debates with Ms. Michaels, and I respect her, she's a smart woman, but one thing that people need to understand is right now we have a board of 5 Republicans, and I would assume, because I'm not seeing any strong Democratic runners in the other districts for those seats, you're going to retain 5 Republicans or at least 4 for the Board of Supervisors. And if you think as a Democrat you're going to come into that group and continue to be a strong voice for the Verde Valley, continue to get those resources, because continue to get that support, it ain't going to happen. And, you know, the 20 years that Chip put into bringing that voice back to the Verde Valley and those resources back to the Verde Valley, and the 4 years that we've been doing it, and we've been very strong. We've brought more money in the last 4 years. We brought $35 million into this community for road work that's never happened before. If you think those resources and those funding and those services are going
Chip Davis,
it ain't going to happen.
Chip Davis
can go back 24 years.
Chip did a yeoman's job of, and it was hard. I was at a lot of those meetings because I was a reporter at the time, and going to a lot of those meetings with Carol Springer and those others that
it was a fight.
There was only 3 supervisors at the time. So during the population shift, it went from 3 to 5. And so this side of the mountain got 2 votes, supposedly. But you still had to convince 1 more person on the other side of the mountain for your proposals to get anything for the Verde Valley.
So supervisors' districts are geographical.
Geographic.
And 5 of them, you right. represent 5 separate geographical districts. I wanted to read some places you do not represent.
But I got to finish my Chip Davis.
We are canonizing by places he doesn't represent.
We are canonizing Chip Davis in a Jim Bishop play that we're doing at Old Town Center for the Arts at the end of the month, because Chip Davis is characterized in this play as adapted by Kate Hawks and Amy Waddell, another
local. I went to school with Amy.
There you go. 2 writers direct. I saw her last night. We're preparing this play. where I happen, of course, I'm chuckling a little bit. They make Chip Davis in this play as the savior of the Verde River. I mean, almost to we're talking spiritual status here, which is actually in some ways not too far from the truth at the time. It was interesting that Jim Bishop, the writer who passed away recently of this particular play, it's called Pink Nectar Cafe, by the way, canonizes this.
Chip is still alive.
He's currently our treasurer running for that position.
He works for a Democrat. That's right.
He worked for a Democrat.
He worked for Tom O'Halloran, who was also an ex-Republic. So you see in this whole kind, that's what I'm talking about.
Well, keep in mind, our district has 50 miles of Verde River in it.
Yes.
So it's very, you know, Verde River is very much a part of our community.
And some of us think it's the lifeblood of the community without the river.
Can be.
It can be. It's a big part. Anyway, now go ahead.
Because Randy represents, Cottonwood and Sedona and places you heard of, but he doesn't represent very important metropolitan districts like Potato Patch. That's a real.
Well, there actually is a potato patch in our district, but unfortunately, there's nobody who lives there full time.
Pronghorn Ranch. You don't represent Pronghorn Ranch, Lynx Creek, Granville, Diamond Valley. What about Diamond Valley? No.
No diamonds.
We got diamonds in this valley.
I admit my ignorance. I had never heard of any of those places.
Most of them are forest towns. You know, they're out behind Costco, that area. You know, they're back in the woods. So they're very much seasonal.
You should go to Lynx Lake one sometime. It's a beautiful place.
All right. Potato Patch is a place to represent.
What you got to remember is when they went from three districts to five, they did a really great job of redistricting and redrawing those boundaries. And your boundaries for districts are based on precinct for voting. So that's why the lines seem skewed sometimes and what they are and where they are. We have Perkinsville on ours. There's only probably 40 people out there. There's probably 8 voters out there, but it's all the way out there. And our boundaries actually go the other side of the mountain, almost to the power lines coming off of Mingus. But it's all based on population. So when they split up the boundaries, they did a great job of splitting up the districts based on population at that time, also a value for properties, because you want to make sure that you're representing a fair share of the value as well as the population, because that's where your taxes come from. And so you want to make sure that everybody that's paying their taxes has fair and equal representation in how that money gets spent, and also how they're going to get taxed moving forward, so you don't end up having all your power in one district.
So right now you represent most of the Verde Valley. There is one other district that takes in a big part of the
District
Verde Valley.
District 2 too. Takes in half of Cornville, and then Rimrock, Lake Montezuma, Camp Verde, and head on down. Page Springs is in District 2 as well. We'll be redistricting next year as well. So the census is going on. Very important. Make sure you put in your information in the census. It's extremely important this year so that we continue to get our money from the federal government and also our representation. So be sure to participate in the census. But once we get those numbers back, which will be about April, we'll be sitting down with the group and putting together a redistricting movement, and we'll be looking at redrawing those boundaries and lines based on the population.
April of 21.
Okay. Yeah, I just want everyone to understand how the supervisors worked, how it's by district, and there are 5 of you, and you're the main, I guess you represent the main part of the Verde Valley.
The bulk of the Verde Valley, the bulk of the value, and also the bulk of the population.
I want to talk about development, because I think that's where your fight's coming from the Democrats. But you want to talk about workforce housing, so I'm going to concede to you for at least a little while. Let's talk about workforce housing. It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. And development, as we've been saying and continue to say, everything is connected. Everything is tied together. Everybody thinks that when you talk about workforce housing, you're only talking about that silo of workforce housing or that silo of traffic or that silo of development or all those things. Everything is connected. So workforce housing is extremely important, and this valley has been inundated with Airbnb, and it's been a plague on Sedona, like it or not. It is drastically changed the face of our communities, changed the face of our neighborhoods, and it's raised the property values to the point where people are being priced out of their homes. We were at a meeting the other day, and it was stated that the billionaires are now buying out the millionaires in Sedona and pushing them out. So, you know, they're moving out. But when you live next to, when you're in the second fastest growing state in the United States and you're living within 100 miles of the fastest growing city in the United States, you should expect that people are going to come up here and decide it was a great place to spend the weekend, go for a hike, go for a mountain bike ride, go drink some wine, eat the great food, and then go back and say, why are we down here when we can get to work just as fast from the Verde Valley as we can from across the valley?
Right. Chandler.
And so, you know, workforce housing is unfortunately a problem because we got more and more people moving in up here that don't necessarily have to live here or have to work here, and they're retiring here. We're also, right now, this county is the third oldest county in the state, and within the next 20 years, we're going to be the oldest county. So we're a great place to retire, a great place to spend time because of all the environment we have, because of the river, because of all of our outdoor activities, because of the wine industry, because we're just a beautiful place to spend time.
Yeah, if you look at the county stats, the average age is like 55 or 56, which is pretty high.
It is in Sedona.
So development is a problem. So development is a problem because, you know, you've got a little bit of land left available. There tend to be fairly large pieces of land. And when you see the prices going where they are currently with a two-bedroom house, you know, the average price of a house in Sedona is $580. The private price of a house in Cottonwood is now $280. In Clarkdale, it's over $3. In Jerome, it's over $3. Wow. When you're a developer and you have a piece of land and you see those kind of values, plus you see that houses aren't staying on the market more than 30 days, sometimes not weeks. There is no inventory available, right. And the demand is high. You're seeing that as a great opportunity to get into a space of making some money and developing your property. Finally, you know, the slowdown in the economy we had back in 2006, 2007, it's taken us this long to get back to a position of having a strong economy again, to where it's actually meanable or capable of developing property and selling them. So you're seeing people jump back into this market because they see an opportunity. The problem is it keeps being pushed and keeps being said that this is going to be for workforce housing. That's what Rojo Grande came in and said. We're going to be workforce housing. Spring Creek is saying we're going to be workforce housing. I'm not so sure at the end of the day we're going to get any workforce housing out of this because we have so many people that want to either buy a second home up here or move up here out of the Phoenix market that they're going to take over those houses because the houses that they could have gone into have been bought out and been taken over by Airbnb, which means our workforce has been displaced. We sat on the side of the road this morning having a talk with CSA about a legislative item that's coming up about the Airbnb bills that are going through the legislature right now, and the traffic going to Cottonwood out of Sedona was sparse at best.
Right.
At best, it was sparse. You could have used at least another lane on that side to move the traffic coming into Sedona.
Right.
It was nonstop.
Yes.
You were looking in the rearview mirror, and you have to wait to get in line to get into Sedona. There is that much of your people coming in out of the other parts of the Verde Valley, which gets back into Verde Connect being such an important part of what we're doing. But you've got all the workforce here isn't from here. We've lost the ability for people to live in the communities they work. And so development is very much a part of this. Unfortunately, workforce housing is one of the discussions that's driving that.
What are we going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? Yeah.
You know, I don't know that there's a cure. That's the problem, is everybody is so anti-development. That's why I've got a person running against me, is they are anti-development.
That's
right. And it's unfortunate. And I'm not... I grew up here. I was raised here. I'm fifth generation Cottonwood. I grew up on these streets when they were still dirt. We had no lights. I remember marching in the St. Patrick's Day Parade, which will be this weekend. If you got a chance, come on out to St. Patrick's Day this Saturday. But you know, we marched in it when it started at West Sedona at the Rainbow's Inn and went all the way to Uptown and every, you know, all the way through the dead spot there where Mariposa is now. And, you know, and it was a two-lane road with trailers and junkie houses on the side of the street. And your friends would back up their truck with a keg of green beer in the back. And, you know, it was a small town event. It was the only parade this side of the Mississippi. Now there's one in almost every community, it seems like. But, you know, I grew up here. I watched it change. I watched it develop. I can remember driving from Flagstaff back home or coming up out of Phoenix, and you could see spots of light. You knew exactly which each community was because of what the lights are. And now they're kind of joining together, and it's becoming much less about where a boundary is. But you know, one thing that people need to remember, you know, we keep hearing that we're going to overdevelop the Verde Valley, and I'm not even talking about our resources. We got to worry about our resources. But we have 88% public land. We're always going to have open space. There's nothing we can do about getting rid of that open space and nothing we want to do about getting rid of that open space. But we're the only area in the county that has that going for us, has the ability to continue to be open regardless of the development that happens within
all
the spaces.
Randy, let me ask
but that
you,
makes those spaces that much more important, how we develop them, because we don't want to ruin what little bit we have left.
Now, you pointed out about workforce housing, and I think the objection for a lot of people to workforce housing is that it won't be workforce housing. What, do you have a solution to this problem? We build Spring Creek. We build Rojo Grande. They're not good. People in Sedona are skeptical that they'll ever turn into workforce housing.
So we do.
And so that's one reason for the opposition.
And they should fear that. And so we do. We have several solutions, actually, that we're working on right now. So one thing is we have a ton of infill available to us, regardless of these little pieces of land that we have available, like Spring Creek or where Bellagio was going to go or where the glamping was going to go or even Rojo Grande. Besides those little large chunks of property, we have a ton of infill. Just the Rimrock area has 3,000 buildable lots today. So we've got two programs that we're working on right now. One is that we just started implementing. We just paid for the set of three plans, and we're going to be putting a forward together as a program forward as a board here real soon, where we're creating plans for workforce housing homes to be built. So one of the biggest barriers for people that are at the bottom end of the wage scale of getting into a home is being able to afford to buy it. So we're going to try and figure out a way to help them build their house. And so we're going to be, overall, we're going to be creating 9 sets of plans. We just paid to have 3 done. We'll hopefully have them drawn and ready to go by the end of this month. So these plans are 900 to 1,700 square foot homes. They'll be very modest homes. They'll be very efficient drawings. They're going to be very minimal expense to build, as far down as you can get it and make it achievable for somebody to go and build a home if they can find a lot and buy a lot. And then what we're going to do is we're going to have a program in place where if that person comes in and says, I bought this lot in Rimrock, and it's RCU 20 or 100 or whatever the zoning is, we're going to be able to open up the book, say, here's 4 plans that you have available to build a house on that lot. And they say, well, I'd like that one. And you say, okay, draw me a plot plan. Show me where you want to put that house. Show me where you're going to put your septic, where your utilities are going. And you can walk out today with a full set of house plans ready to build and a permit for a couple $100.
And you have these available at the county?
We will have them available soon. We paid for the first set of 3 already. We're going to have them done by the end of this month.
900
and
to
hopefully by next month, we're going to have a program in place to start getting those in the hands of people that need to build workforce housing. Right now, the latest study that was shown that we're working off of shows 1,800 homes were missing in the workforce arena right now. We have 1,800 homes that need to be built just to deal with the workforce we currently have. We were sitting right out here across from the sewer plant. We saw people coming out of the woods that were heading into work.
Right.
They're sleeping in their cars. I've got resorts over here in Sedona that are looking at building housing units, apartment complexes, specifically for nothing more than to house their workforce, because their workforce has to sleep in a car at night in order to be up here and earn a living. So that's going to be one way. We're going to make it extremely. So that's going to lower the barrier for getting into a house by about $10,000 by giving them these plans and giving them the right to be able to walk out the door with not only plans but their permits in hand for a couple hundred bucks. That's going to be, I think, impactful at the end of the day. The second thing that we're doing right now to
deal
with,
that's a massive education project. Getting people to come in, even to realize if you got a chunk of land and some plans, you got the beginning of a habitat.
Oh, you bet. And I can tell you that we've been going out meeting with all the mayors and managers of all the communities in Yavapai County, not just this side of the hill, but the other side as well. And every one of them are lining up.
Okay.
They're going to be implementing this program as well. And the plans that we're drawing are going to be adaptable. So each community is going to have the ability to go in and modify their plans so that the houses that are built off those plans fit within the goals or the expectations of what they want to see in their community. So you're going to see that. I think it's going to be impactful. I think it really, at the end of the day, is going to be impactful for our community and for the people that need to get into workforce housing and can't afford currently to buy.
Because in Sedona, this is not a theoretical thing. I mean, most of the guys when I drove Jeeps who were single can no longer live in Sedona. Right. All the housing that the guys lived in is gone.
80% of Sedona government workforce lives outside of the city.
Now, I don't mind personally, but in my neighborhood, I was telling to my wife, I said, people don't say hello when they're walking around. They're Airbnb people.
It's
I don't know who they
it's
are.
It's ruined neighborhoods.
I don't mind it, but it is... It is a real thing. It's not a theoretical deal.
No, it's a very real thing. And unfortunately, that cat's out of the bag. So, you know, we're actually putting legislation forward right now that is moving forward that will hopefully start to put some, not restrictions, but at least some things in place to help get a handle on Airbnb, or at least make the business of Airbnb once again a business and recognize it as such.
Well, that's
one of the things I want to talk about workforce housing that we're doing is a little over a year, about a year and a half at this point ago, we sat down with Justin Clifton and started discussing workforce housing. What are we going to do? Justin Clifton, city manager of City Sedona. So
wanted you to say
Sedona
that.
They've got growth. They've got a lot of resorts coming in. Sedona has been very, very proactive on making any new resort or any new large project come into their community, understand and put money forward to deal with workforce housing in some manner. So they've been collecting a fairly significant war chest at this point, and they have no real good way to spend that money yet, meaningful way to spend that money that actually does workforce housing, right? So he sat down and said, I came from Colorado. This was a program that was running up there. I'd like to see what you think about moving this forward. So we sat down and we said, this sounds great to us. I think this has got some traction. I think we can get it moving. So we brought together every city manager and mayor of all of the communities of the Verde Valley, sat down and had a discussion with them to talk about creating a workforce housing coalition of sorts. It was considered an authority because that's what they're typically called is housing authorities. Nobody likes the government implication of an authority. So we're looking at creating this coalition. So we had the first meeting, and I can tell you that the response was underwhelming. People weren't quite as sure how this was going to be something they could participate in, how it was going to affect their communities, because everybody still continues to think about their community as their community, but everybody has to start thinking about the Verde Valley as a whole, because anything any one of these communities does is going to impact directly every other community in the Verde Valley. So we had our second meeting. We actually got some traction. People said, we thought about it. I think there's some things we can do working together.
Well, when you think workforce housing, you think slum. You think government housing.
Unfortunately, you think of the projects, right?
Right, exactly.
So, and that, at the end of the day, is the direction we're going. So we brought everybody back together. They said, we like the conversation. Let's move this forward. Then we then went out and brought VV Rio in, the Verde Valley Regional Economic Organization, because they're also having to deal with workforce housing as part of economic development. And we also brought in NACOG, the Northern Arizona Council of Governments, who is where the bulk of our funding from the federal government comes through when it comes into the counties and our communities, is through NACOG. And so we brought them into this conversation because one of the larger pots of money we get for our communities is CDBG,
right,
Community Development Block Grant money. County,
right.
Which is how we do housing and workforce housing and how we do home modifications and renovations. And we start to create benefits for the lower segment of our population when it comes to wages and scale of living. And so
and communities they decide what to do with CDBG money. And
each community gets to decide how they want to spend that money. But they came in and said, we're going to actually pony up some of your money as a collective, NACOG, and allow you to utilize that for an administrator. So currently, we're meeting to create an actual authority. We're going to sit down
and
create this coalition.
Somebody's going to pay for a supervisor.
They're going to pony up the money for an administration arm of that. We're going to start going out. There's a workforce housing study right now that's being done that Sedona was the impetus of that. I think the total buy-in from all the communities in the Verde Valley is about $105,000 to do this workforce housing study to figure out where the jobs are, where they're working, how they're getting back and forth, transit, how we're going to deal with traffic, how we're going to deal with transit, look at the opportunities that are in each of these areas and communities based on available lots, available building space that's currently ready to go. And then we're going to use this group to come forward and figure out how can we go find a developer to take that opportunity. Where can we go find the funding, whether it's grants or USDA or other sources to back this project? Then we're going to go out and find the contractors to do this work, and we're going to create workforce housing ourselves, because if we can control that, we can make sure it's workforce housing. When you have a Rojo Grande or a Spring Creek or one of these developers come in and say, but we're going to have a fair amount of workforce housing, there is absolutely nothing we can do about making sure that actually happens. We have to figure out a way we can actually make workforce housing workforce
housing. The temptation to make scads of money is too strong, as you said. The pressure on development for housing, for not workforce housing, for not affordable housing, is too huge. And any developer that comes in,
At the end of the day, they want to sell a house.
They want to sell lots of them.
Right. And the first thing you learn is that the communities in the Verde Valley want workforce housing. So if you build housing, you're going to say, I'm building workforce housing. It's sort of logical. So I think the problem that you raised and the issue that you raised is good, is how do we actually get workforce housing out of these developments?
Well, you lined out quite a plan. You lined out they're all talking anyway, and that's a great, and they have leadership and they have plans. So I mean,
they're
putting these components together. And what Steve was saying was what I'm going to say too, and that we're hoping that this pops out into a recognizable, visible, okay, here's, in Sedona, they talked about that land out by the sewer for somebody. Here's 185 acres, and we're gonna put this housing out here, and it's going to cost this much. Same thing in Rimrock. Same thing in a variety of neighborhoods where there's plenty of infill, as you talked about, rather than filling it up between Cottonwood and Sedona, as so many have predicted. So we got workforce housing, but before we run out of time, we want to mention the road that we talked about last time. You know, you got between 260 and the village of Oak Creek.
Verde Connect.
We want to talk about Verde Connect as another way of moving people around and moving a workforce around in a more efficient manner than we talked about this morning.
And explain it, because as I've lived here for, I don't know, since 2003, there's been all these different versions of it, of discussions of something like Verde Connect. So what is it now actually going to do, Randy?
Well, so if you go back and look at the history, about every 5 years, there's a study, Verde Valley Regional study, that's done on traffic and roads, and ADOT sponsors that. And for the last 20 years, there has been at the top of the list of needed new infrastructure. They look at every road. They look at and the latest survey actually was monumental, because it not only looked at the roads and the existing structure and the traffic counts, but it also went one step further, and they went out and they looked at what is expected to be the growth of the different communities in the Verde Valley, and also where the jobs are in the different communities of the Verde Valley. And they said, we're going to add on not only to our current traffic count, but we're going to add on future traffic count based on where we believe people will be living and where they're going to be working and how they're going going to have to get back and forth between those two locations. So the Verde Connect idea, a road that crosses somewhere between Cornville and 260, has been in the pipeline for this regional land use or regional traffic plan for well over 20 years. It's actually been in Camp Verde's master plan, community development plan, for 29 years. They've been requesting a road that be built in that area specifically to deal with moving people in and out of the middle of the area.
It's been local scuttlebutt for 50 years.
Yeah, so it's been on the radar for not only Camp Verde, but for the Verde Valley for a very long time. Unfortunately, it's a very large project and a very expensive project. And so when we came in, one of the things people were hitting us up about is, what are you going to do to help create better opportunities on traffic? How are we going to deal with the traffic? Traffic's becoming overwhelming, and it's ruining our quality of life for different communities. How are we going to start moving people around more efficiently and removing them from places where they shouldn't be? And so we started looking at what our opportunities were, and because of how much public land is around here and our topography and where the roads are built, there really is very few opportunities from us. ADOT owns the largest of the corridors of how we move our people around the Verde Valley. They own 260, they own 89A, and they own 179. So we have to, as a county and cities, look at how do we tie those different corridors together to make them more efficient. Cornville Road, luckily, is ours. So we looked at the traffic plans. We looked at the idea that this was going to be meaningful for not only the village of Oak Creek and Sedona, but also of Camp Verde and Cottonwood. And every community in the Verde Valley is actually going to benefit from this road being put in. But one of the larger people that's going to benefit, or community is going to benefit, is Cornville.
Where exactly is it going from where to where, Randy?
Traffic. So it starts right now. We went through a year-long process of designing the location. That corridor was opened up for discussion from Bridgeport all the way to I-17, and then it continued to narrow down based on public input and public scoping, and we finally came up with a few versions, and the latest version that has now been chosen will leave Jones Ford, Corey Drive, right there between Camp Verde and Cottonwood. Actually, it sits right between the two communities. Each community is on either side of that road currently, and it'll go across the river right there just east of Thousand Trails, and then it'll wind its way over and tie into Beaverhead Flat on the Cornville Road. And then once we cross the river, we'll have a road that will come back in and tie into the Middle Verde area as well.
So a lot of people that travel around the area have certainly seen these intersections, and someday maybe you want to travel the rough land in between Jones Ford on 260 and the Beaverhead Flat connection, where Beaverhead meets McGuireville Road or the Cornville Road, and then you'll see a little dirt road out there. I used to go shooting out there, actually,
I used to hunt out there.
Not much anymore, I guess, or at least, which is fine. This is a good use of the land, in my opinion. Don't forget, like I said, we've been talking about this. I moved here in 1972. We've been talking about this since then. It got on the government's radar 20 years ago and 29 years ago in the various communities, but we've been looking for a way for a long, long time.
Let me ask Randy, how exactly will this help?
Well, so
running out of time, Randy, so you've got 30 seconds. No, you've got a minute.
So if you look at the traffic studies, the bulk of the traffic going what would be east and north on Cornville Road and then turning on to Beaverhead Flat and going towards the village, about 80% of that traffic is coming out of the Cottonwood area and the Cornville area, going left at Beaverhead Flat and going into the village. And if you look at how that traffic is coming back out, about 90% of the traffic coming out of the village and 179 when they hit Beaverhead Flat and Cornville Road is turning right and heading into Cornville so they can get into the Cottonwood area. This is going to allow the bulk of that traffic to flow straight through to 260, and at that time determine whether they want to turn left and go into Camp Verde, which will be a closer travel if they're going to the stores or shopping or the hospital, or turn right and head into Cottonwood. So
if you'd like to know more,
we're looking at this being a meaningful reduction to the traffic.
Please call Randy Garrison's office. These traffic patterns can get a little confusing, especially if you're not as familiar with the area as some of us. So please call the office, find out what's going on. Because I know all I hear is when I come to Sedona is traffic. But we want to thank Randy Garrison, District 3, Christine Brandy Christine Bateman for being here this morning. And we'll have to ask you back because obviously there's lots more here. We want to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks who have their breakfast coming up. Turn Arizona Blue. It's the Thursday, third Thursday of the month. We're going to have Natalie Burdick, Jay Ruby, and Alex Piacenza. The Yavapai Precinct Committee Chair and Jay Ruby is and Natalie are field organizers for LD6. Please try to make the door breakfast at Old Sedona Bar and Grill on March 19th, St. Joseph's Day. Democratic Perspective. See you next time, folks.
Listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZN. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.